But you know, on these kind of things, the union always enters the picture. Mm-hmm. The union enters the picture on everything and every single piece of legislation that's put into place here. So sometimes it becomes very difficult. I have a very close relationship with the Sanitation Workers Union. I have very high regard for all of them, mm-hmm. very high regard, and I speak to them every day mm-hmm. About one problem or another. If they have a SAM worker that comes to them with a problem that they feel needs my attention, they will refer the sanitation worker to me. So I have referrals coming from everywhere, from out in the field, from down in the clinic, from the union, from the people upstairs. I am the person here that also sees the civilians that are sick. Civilians that become ill here have a different set of rules. They are not seen by the clinic physicians.
Do they have unlimited sick leave too?
No, they do not. No. They get 12 sick days a year. Mm-hmm. If there is a problem, and there is a problem with the young lady upstairs right now, what do we need to do? Their problem on their personal level that they discuss with me is never revealed, but I will just say, okay, I am referring her to this person, okay, because I feel that's the proper area to refer her to. She needs to get some help. She's probably going to need to have an extension of her sick leave, and that's in the process now. I just got an email about it this morning. Mm. So our trade title people, when they become very sick, are seen by me.
What are the trade title people?
Trade title people are electricians, blacksmiths, welders, auto mechanics, plumbers, all those titles. Those are our trade title people. Mm-hmm. Some of them have a 90-day sick leave grant a year, but most have 12. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if they become ill, they can be referred from any area, from their work area, from if they report to a BME or BBM, those are all different areas, or BWD, which is the Bureau of Waste Disposal. My referrals come from everywhere. From different problems that arise that somebody feels, a need for my intervention for one reason or the other. The writing encompasses enormous amounts of my time. I do all of the no-fault cases here. SAM worker, if he's injured and the truck is involved, that goes into a no-fault status case to figure out the amount of time that they lost that they were not able to perform their regular duty as a result of the incident, and then the lawyers figure out how much they're going to be paid.
So you know a lot about what actually goes on the street too then?
Very much so.
Yeah.
I'm very astute to that. Mm-hmm. Very astute to that. I look at our cancer cases very carefully. I want to make sure that we're not having any clusters forming anywhere. Mm-hmm. We don't have any more cancer here than the private populace does, but I want to make sure that if I have three guys somewhere along the road up in Bronx 7, that three of them don't have a like cancer. So I'm very astute to all of those cases. Mm-hmm. If there is an active TB case here, I will go to the district and give a lecture at roll call in the morning to discuss tuberculosis, what it is, how it's transmitted, and if I feel it necessary, get the Department of Health in here to Manchu test everybody. Mm-hmm. If there is a case of hepatitis, meningitis, whatever it is, anything that has potential for transmission, I'm the one that is notified, and I am the one that will call the physician, call the hospital, work with infectious disease in the hospital to figure out what's going on, how this happened. The ironic thing and the most interesting thing about sanitation workers is that because of what they do every day, their immune system actually functions better than yours and mine.
That's really interesting.
It's very interesting because they're exposed to low levels of so many different types of bacteria on a daily basis, their immune system has to wake up every day. So their immune system wakes up and says, okay, guys, we got to get the boxing gloves on. There's a new bacteria on the picture here, and we got to fight. Mm-hmm. So their immune system wakes up every day to this new bacteria. So, and I always say to them when I see a guy that's going out sick all the time, I always tell them that and say, how is it then you're so sick all the time? I'm here every day, and your immune system is better than mine, so knock it off, basically. The jig is up. Yeah. I know what you're doing, mm-hmm. so stop. Very important also to say that there are no like illnesses here. There are no like illnesses here. Every now and then I see a case of hepatitis A, but the biggest transmitter of hepatitis A is raw seafood. Transmitted by blood, body fluids, raw seafood. So if we get a guy that's eating a lot of sushi, or he's eating a lot of raw clams, raw oysters, that out, he may pop up with hepatitis A along the way. Hep B is the one that I watch out for the most common form of hepatitis, and we have to worry about that because SAM workers are exposed to bloodborne pathogens when they get punctured with a needle. They never leave the clinic without being seen by me, ever. I see every single SAM worker that's stuck with a needle. I am the one that keeps all the statistics on needle punctures. I watch them for one full year after that puncture to make sure that they're not developing an illness that has any relationship. I make sure that they're immunized against tetanus toxoid and that they get their 3 doses of Hep B vaccine, which is very important.
How frequent is the it's getting punctured?
We average about 22 to 24 needle punctures a year, which in this vast workforce is a very low number. They don't occur during any given time of the year. You would think you'd see more in the spring, summer. We don't see that. They don't occur in any given area more frequently than another. They occur across the board, and most of our punctures, by the way, occur from diabetic in-home needle users, okay, who indiscriminately discard their needles, even though we educate them how to do it properly. So I would say that 85-90% of our punctures come from diabetic needles. The other fraction is coming from the immigrants that we have in this country for some reason, and I don't know why. I can't explain this because I've even asked them, why do you do that? What's that all about? The Russian populace is very big on giving themselves vitamin injections. Very big on that. Now we're talking about a different kind of needle. Now we're talking about an intramuscular needle, which is 3 times the size of a diabetic needle. So when the safety officers go out to check, our environmental police officers go out to check on the needle punctures, they're very astute to the size of the needles because they have to file an investigative report that comes in here to me so that we're all on the same page with what's being done here. Is there anything else that we need to do? I make sure that they get their hepatitis B vaccine. Do we have cases of hepatitis C? Yes, we do. That is certainly the most dangerous form of hepatitis. That is the one that really makes them very, very, very ill. Fortunately, we do have treatments for today, which put them into remission, and I see many of them go into remission. They are mostly Vietnam vets who are my age, okay, who were in Vietnam, came back, straightened out their lives, got married, had a family, and all of a sudden the hepatitis C virus has been latent all those years, and now all of a sudden the man's getting older. His immune system doesn't work as well, and all of a sudden the hepatitis C virus says, hello, fella, and it's out of the box. And the cases that I have here do well. They do well. They don't do well during the time when they're being treated. Treatments like interferon and ribavirin are very rough on your system. It's almost like chemotherapy, so they get sick during that period, but return to work and do well. They're remissive.
It's that kind of thing that makes an unlimited sick policy seem warranted.
Important.
Yeah, important. You know.
It is, but you know, when unlimited sick leave was established, it was established by a very, very smart man. His name was Commissioner John DeLory, who was a commissioner here many, many, many years ago. And Commissioner DeLory established unlimited sick leave for those sanitation workers that were injured while they were at work who needed time to recover. And what happened is over the years, it transcended into this massive, massive unlimited sick leave that we have today. And that is not good.
Your opinion is that it's not good. It doesn't work?
It's not healthy for them. I think, you know, if you're injured, I think if you become ill, it has its place. Do I think that you should be allowed to use it because you want to go get a dental checkup? You want to go to your doctor for your annual physical because your kid's got to be picked up from school and your wife's working or your wife wants to go shopping? It's outrageously abused.
Yeah.
I'm not up with that. I would like to see them deny sick leave more for certain things. I don't think that, unless it's an emergency dental visit where you got to have an immediate root canal or you got an abscess or something, you got to deny their use of sick leave for certain things. I think it's out of hand. I think it's a terribly abused system.
Mm-hmm.
And I often wonder why, when I hear Mayor Bloomberg and all the politicians address the city workforces, nobody gears in on the unlimited sick leave in sanitation, police, and fire. Nobody,
all three have it.
All three have it. Nobody gears in on that. And I think a lot of, certainly I think people in the city of New York don't know they have it, unless you have somebody that works in one of those forces.
I didn't know until...
Yeah. I think it has its place. I think for an injury, for someone who becomes grossly ill, who needs to be taken care of, who needs time to recover, it has its place. But for carte blanche use, I don't think so. I think it's very, very bad. I think it absolutely needs to be changed. I think in this day and age, you have to understand that when a sanitation worker is not in his district reporting for work, then he has to be replaced with somebody. Now, if they have to bring a man from another district because they're short that day, that man comes from, let's say, this guy's in Brooklyn 14, and now they have to send a guy from Brooklyn 15. The guy coming from Brooklyn 15 gets 4 hours on the books because he's detached. That's money.
It's overtime, right?
Everything here is money.
Mm-hmm.
Everything here is money. This having to replace people is preposterous. Is preposterous. You know, we have a huge drug testing program here. Huge. Certainly in place.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who have CDLs here who drive sanitation trucks, which are, listen, a sanitation truck is a very, very dangerous weapon. It's a weapon. It can cut you or a piano right in half.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you get a guy out there who had a few snorts of cocaine the day before, or 3 days before, or that morning, who comes in and he's driving that truck, he can kill himself, his partner, and three people on the street.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we absolutely have to have that in place. Mm-hmm. I think I would like them to see do even more broad spectrum testing, because I think that most of the abuse in here is street drugs. It's Vicodin, it's oxycodone, OxyContin. This is stuff they're buying on the street.
Mm-hmm.
We test many other city workforces aside from sanitation here, because we really have a very good program. And that's a federally mandated program. Yet there's too much of it. There's too much of it. But again, that's a sign of the times.
It was different. It's been different since you've been here?
I think so.
There's more now or less?
There's more street drug use.
Mm-hmm.
There's more street drug use. You know, when you get a man who gets injured and his doctor just keeps giving him oxycodone because that's what pain management is all about, I'm absolutely totally against that. Totally against that.
Yeah.
It's a bogus operation. It gets people addicted. When a man has a severe back injury and you're trying to relieve his symptoms, the answer to that is getting to the bottom of the problem and diagnosing it properly and fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
Not keep pumping the man with oxycodone or Percodan,
mm-hmm,
and letting him get addicted to it and then having to put the man into an addiction service, a detox, before you can even now do surgery on them. That's outrageous. And you see a lot of that.
Uh-huh.
And that's those things are disturbing to me. They're very disturbing. Doctors don't pay attention. Doctors who have a patient, and by and large, this is how most doctors think. It's just like physicians don't like to, a patient is admitted to the hospital, and the doctor says, okay, she has this, that, this, and the other, but I can work on fixing that. But while she's in the hospital, she suddenly develops something else. Now, he knows he can't fix it, so he doesn't want to deal with that anymore. So he pawns her off to five consultants in the hospital to get them involved in this case now, and where's the case going? And now he wants to walk away. It's just like the sanitation worker here who has a low back injury, who has, let's say, a bulging disc, which is very symptomatic, can't be relieved with proper care, with proper physical therapy, with a doctor who pays attention to this patient, with a doctor and a physical therapist who take the time to say, look, aside from you doing the exercises here with me, you need to do these at home to help yourself. That's very few and far between that you're going to find that. So what happens is the SAM worker just keeps complaining. He can't work. He's having trouble sitting, standing, walking, et al. So his orthopedist says, oh, the hell with this. This guy's not going nowhere. Now I'm going to refer him to pain management. Puts him onto a pain management doctor who just keeps says, okay, we're going to give you 3 steroid injections now. We know that, number one, most oftentimes they don't work. Number three, they leave scar tissue in their wake. So I'm not a fan of that. That's not the way to treat this patient. Okay, so now the pain management doctor has given him 3 injections. They didn't work. The guy's still complaining. So now he says, okay, we're going to give you some OxyContin. That'll help you get through. It's not the answer.
It's not. It's only taking the pain away. It's not.
That's all it does. It doesn't fix the problem. Mm-hmm. So, listen, pain management clinics are springing up all over the place. I am absolutely, totally against them. I think, look, they have their place when you have a cancer patient who has metastasis in their bones, wherever, and they're in an enormous amount of pain. It's difficult for them to lie down, to sit, to do anything. I think pain management has its place. Mm-hmm. But for orthopedic injuries, pain management is a serious mistake. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work well, and you're not hitting what's causing the pain. All you're doing is masking it, that's mm-hmm. all, and that's not helping the person get better.
Are those the most common injuries? Orthopedic?
Back injury is the highest rate of injury here. Mm-hmm. In the sanitation worker, again, repetitive motion injury. Mm-hmm. And sanitation workers, and I try, and other people try to say, listen, when you lift, you don't lift with your back, you lift with the power in your legs. That's the proper lifting technique. You make sure that your posture is good before you even lift. You don't just grab things and throw them, grab things and lift them. You don't do that. Take a minute, stop, and make sure your posture is correct before you move something heavy, lift something heavy, throw something heavy. Mm-hmm. Don't, if it's something that's heavy and you can't lift it, that's what your partner's there for. Mm-hmm. You lift it together. Mm-hmm. You don't do things like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is by far our highest rate of injury. It's funny, it occurs at different times, summer, winter. Their hours change in the summer to 6 to 2. Most of the injuries occur at 9 a.m. in the summer, 10 a.m. in the winter.
Do you know why that is? Oh, rush hour?
Yes.
Is it
early? No. It's because they come in early in the morning in the summer, 6 o'clock. It's starting to get hot by 8 o'clock. It's heating up a little bit. The sun is really coming into play now. They want to finish what they're doing and get out of the heat. Not such a bad idea, because in the summer we have to worry about, all year long we have to worry about dehydration, but more so in the summer when they're working hard and their routes are very long now. They're going to get even longer.
Do you notice more injuries when the routes get longer?
Well, you know, one time we had a 3-man truck, not a 2-man truck.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
I think the injuries get greater at a 5-year mark because they get careless. They think they know everything.
You mean when the worker has worked 5 years?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The injuries really begin to pop up more 5 years after they're on the job, because they get more lackadaisical about what they're doing. They get more careless. Mm-hmm. They don't watch where they're putting their hands, watch where they're putting their feet, mm-hmm. watch where they're stepping. They get a little more careless. They want to run their routes, and finish early and get back inside. The routes have gotten longer, so they're not anywhere near as much inside as they used to be. And certainly with the advent of when recycling stepped into place, they were out much longer. Years ago, there was a different trend of thought, and that was let them run their routes, let them get done. The less they're out in the street, the less accidents they're going to get in, or the less altercations they're going to get in. So just let them run and get done.
What do you think changed?
What do I think changed? I think the 2-man truck changed, recycling into the picture. Mm-hmm. Some of the classes with more educated people coming in to be sanitation worker. We have people here who were investment bankers before they came here. We have guys with college educations here now as SAM workers. Mm-hmm. And I think that happened because there wasn't much out there. And if there was something out there, they now were young, They got married, they had a family, they have one or two children, they needed to have health benefits, and it just wasn't out there. So they started looking, saying, hey, wow, they have benefits, they make a good salary, mm-hmm. They walk out with a pension. So more of them started taking the tests. As a matter of fact, there was a, when new sanitation workers are hired, I go out to Floyd Bennett to give them a class on bloodborne pathogen control and infectious diseases and basically what they need to watch in their probationary year here, because I'm basically the probationary sand worker's mother.
Ah.
I'm the one that really watches them.
Mm.
Because 3 months prior to the end of their first year, their medical records are all brought in here, and we have to make a decision as to whether or not they're fit enough to be appointed in their title. So